Okay, I want to discuss a topic this week. Which is where essentially machlokas comes from. Are all the shittas right? Are they not shittas? Are they not all right? We say elu ve'elu. We say shim panim haTorah. What does that mean? Is it just that we allow for it? Is we not allow for it? Was the machlokas, how long in our history this has machlokas existed for? When did it begin? When did it begin? Were the two svaras given to Moshe at HaSinai? If so, then how could that be? And if not, so then how did they both become Torah? You know, the first time you ever heard of machlokas, your initial question was, who's right? And the answer was, they're both right. And you're like, what? Eventually you grow up and you kind of realize that, I guess they could both, you know, maybe we don't know who's right, but are they really both right? How do these things operate? How does machlokas work if there's more than one interpretation, which is correct, which is not correct, etc., etc.? So the truth is, the Rambam is Hakdama to Mishnayis. The Rambam is Hakdama to Mishnayis, quote a sheet of the Gaonim. I wouldn't swear, but I think I've seen it in Rav Shvira Gaon. I wouldn't swear, I may not have. In any event, he quotes a sheet of the Gaonim that essentially over time people forgot Torah. This is probably something you may have heard, and all sorts of gemaras to support it. Over time, people's Torah was forgotten. There are stories of certain Tanoim, or even earlier, that people, when they died, thousands of halachas were forgotten, hundreds of halachas were forgotten. And when things are forgotten, if they're reconstructed, the truth is, the Rambam quotes a different gemara, while in the name of these Gaonim, it's a gemara in the Masechet Sanhedrin, on Daf, Pei, Ches, Amid Beis. The gemara there says that the Talmidim of Hillel and Shammai didn't serve the Rabbeim properly, and therefore, being that they didn't serve the Rabbeim properly, they didn't learn Torah properly, didn't memorize Torah properly, and the machloks that exist between Beis Hill versus Beis Shammai, opposed to Hillel and Shammai, outnumber them completely. Hillel and Shammai, if not mistaken, had very few machloks. I think the Gemara maybe says three or something like that. I'm not sure. I don't remember. It's a faint belt, but I don't remember what that Gemara is. So it's just kind of the back of my head. But the machloks between Beis Hillel and Beis Shammai are in the dozens. There's dozens of them. Sometimes you have prakim that quote several of them themselves. And say the Gaonim, that's exactly what this Gemara means when it says they didn't, they were not Masharis the Rabbeim properly. They forgot Torah. They didn't work hard enough to achieve. Okay. The Rambam himself, that's sheet number one. Initially, God gave us the truthful Torah at Har Sinai, and eventually people forgot it. People forgot it over the generations. The main forgetting took place in the times of the early Tanoim, and it progressed throughout. So nowadays, where almost everything is forgotten, and almost like we're working from scratch. Nowadays, we don't have exactly the Masorah from your Rebbe, what Hillel meant. You have what the Gemara says Hillel means was two or three possibilities. There's three Shittas of the Amoraim. And each of the Shittas of the Amoraim has four Rishonim who explain it. And of those 12 Rishonim, there's all the Acharonim who explain which one is this, and it comes out. There's so many different options, so many different possibilities. Tough to know who's saying what. We've forgotten more and more. The Rambam himself disagrees. The Rambam, right there in the Hakdama to Mishnayis, says it's incorrect. For starters, it's such a undermining thing that they do to themselves, which is, they say we believe severely in the Masorah. We allow Rebbe to Talmud, Rebbe to Talmud, Rebbe to Talmud, and that's how Torah is supposed to get passed on. However, the same Masorah that they're relying on, that they're banking on to receive Torah properly, they themselves are saying that Masorah is forgetful and flawed. Says the Rambam, there's no system of there's no proper system of achieving truth. The Rambam is not willing to accept a system where there's no chance of receiving truth. In other words, where the system itself undermines itself. In other words, the system itself is based upon Masorah, based upon people memorizing and. That's what the Gaonim say, and then they say it, and the Gaonim, then the Tanan themselves forgot it. The Rambam doesn't like that at all. Rather, the Rambam says, that the bare certain parts of Torah were given at Har Sinai, and that there's no machlokas about. Halach l'moshe misinai, perish l'moshe misinai. The difference between those two is halach is a law and the parish is an explanation. For example, how do you know tefillin have to be black? Halach l'moshe misinai. How do you know pre-eitz hadar means an esrog and not chves, a beautiful orange? The answer is, it's a parish l'halach l'moshe misinai, where it explains what the pasuk means. The Rambam has five categories of how we know there are certain things. But halacha perish the mush between the Rambam, no one will ever argue on. And that is a mesora that is untouched, and that is untainted. And that we're not going to undermine that mesora. However, most of Torah was not given at Har Sinai in such a fashion. Rather, Hashem told Moshe there are certain principles of interpretation. Maybe there's Rabbi Shmuel's Yud Gimel Midas HaTorah, Yud Gimel HaTorah Dreshes Bahen. Maybe there are other Midos of the Torah, Kal V'Chomer, Gzeir Hashav, Ben Yenav, etc., etc. These are the mechanisms, these are the tools in which Hashem gave us to interpret Torah. And therefore, we had the responsibility of interpreting Torah. If we use the rules properly, we'll come to correct conclusions. If we don't use the rules properly, if we don't take advantage of the instruments God gave us properly, we'll come up with false conclusions. And therefore, says the Rambam, for most of history, people were interpreting Torah correctly, and if not, they would argue back and forth until eventually someone figured out what the truth was. If we sit in a room and argue forever, eventually one of us will convince the other one of our arguments, and eventually we'll find the truth. However, that really changed in the time of Hillel and Shammai, and that's exactly what the Gemara Sanhedrin is alluding to, but the Rambam interprets it differently. He says, two people of equal or similar intelligence will come to parallel conclusions always. Or almost always, or very similar conclusions. Shammai and Hillel are a great example of this. The Machloksim are very, very few. However, over time, people cared less, their reasoning was blurred, they were not as sharp, they were not as focused, they were not as willing to continue learning all the way through. And they're not to be blamed that their intelligence was incomparable to Yoshua and Pinchas, says the Rambam. They're not to be blamed that they're not as smart, but they were not as partial that they were not as smart, partial that they were not as dedicated to finish up the truth. The other Mepharshim were aided in demographical change as Torah grew in the situation that the Jews were in changed, the demography changed, they moved into different communities, they couldn't communicate as well. You put these together, eventually people ended up dying before they came to the proper conclusions, and therefore Machlokes developed. Those are the first two shitas of how Machlokes developed. Let me just point out two or three major differences between them. Summary as well as pulling out important conclusions, major differences in terms of the upshot from one versus the upshot from the other. I'll take a round of questions. Major difference number one is what was given at Har Sinai. How much of Torah Sheva Peh was given at Har Sinai? Major difference number one. According to the Gaonim, what was given? Kol Torah Kula, all of the details, every halacha, everything. According to the Rambam, that's not true. According to the Rambam, select halacha and perish l'moshe m'Sinai were given. The 13 principles of Rabbi Shmuel, or whatever they were, other principles, Kal V'Chomer, Gzeir HaShava, Klal Pradu Klal, whatever else these principles are, Klal U'Prat, Kal V'Chomer, all these different principles, Binyanav, those were given. However, the detail, the drushas themselves, were not actually given at Har Sinai. That is point number one, that's a huge difference. You may have wondered, what was given at Har Sinai? Machlokas around the Gaon. Major machlokas. Number two, what is the ideal form of Torah? L'chora, whatever Hashem gave us at Har Sinai was Torah in its ideal form, the best way. According to the Gaonim, the goal is to amass knowledge, seemingly, to accumulate knowledge, to be aware of all the true facts in the world. And therefore, what did Hashem do? Gave us all the facts to memorize and to pass on from generation to generation. The conclusion to make from the Rambam seemingly is different. The goal of Torah is not to accomplish knowledge as much as it is the process of thinking and questioning and answering and analyzing and breaking things down, arguing back and forth until eventually the truth is revealed. So eventually one person just textually, conceptually, logically, philosophically, whatever the proofs are, whatever the arguments are, convinces the second of the other, and eventually they come to the truth. But the goal is not just to know the information, the goal is to think through and to analyze and to use your intellect to the amelus of Torah, the hard work and dedication of understanding Torah, that seems to be more the goal according to the Rambam. That's why Hashem gave us Torah in a way where we should think about it opposed to accumulate knowledge. This debate goes through and through from the Tanoim to the Amoraim to here from Shonim, the Gonim we're talking about. So there's Mount Hazeh, there are different types of Shirim. There are those Shirim who just get up and shoot out all sorts of information at you. The goal is to memorize as much as possible. There are other type of people who just try their best just to memorize when they learn. The second type of people, maybe the way I classify them will be closer to the Rambam, people who are interested in thinking and analyzing more, to work through a Tosfos and to figure out the Havni and the Maskanis, the different types of conceptual underpinnings, that or the textual underpinnings, whatever they are, that exist. And therefore, that's point number two. What's that? Two more points. Point number three is they both explain why for the first, let's say third, or I don't know if they're on, leave out the math, the first tekufa, the first time period, or several tekufa, there was no machlokas. I mean, you don't find machlokas between Kalev and Yehoshua. You don't find machlokas between the Nevi'im, or the Gedolei Torah of the times of the Nevi'im. If you look back historically speaking, where is the first time we find machlokas? The early Tanayim, really, Hillel and Shammai's Talmidim. Why isn't it shocking, isn't it surprising that no machlokas predates that? Both the Gaonim and the Rambam would say, yeah, that's exactly what the Gemara and Sanhedrin told us. Just, the question is, what did it tell us? The Gaonim would say, Nachinami, the Gemara and Sanhedrin answered that question, there was no machlokas before him because people didn't forget as much before him. The Rambam would say, no, the Gemara Sanhedrin believes that there was no machlokas beforehand, not because people didn't forget beforehand, but rather because there were fewer people learning who were more focused and more intelligent, and they came to the right conclusions. Only afterwards, the Talmidim of Hillel and Shammai, did they start deriving conclusions that are different from each other, that oppose for another. And by the way, both the Gaonim and Rambam would therefore probably believe, as people started forgetting, or people started interpreting new things differently, but as machlokas started growing, and Torah, more and more opinions began to exist, according to the Rambam. Or because we're forgetting more and more, both of those triggered what major historical event in the world of Torah? The Ksiva HaMishnayis, the Ksiva HaMishnayis, writing down the Mishnayis, putting together the Mishnayis. In other words, that, and eventually, Chasima HaMishnayis and Chasima HaTalmud, those two events were probably going to be triggered, historically speaking, as direct results of this. That's point number three, in terms of the development of machlokas and what was there beforehand. And point number four is another point that they agreed to. The first two points were points that they disagreed about, the Gaonim and the Rambam, i.e., what took place on Sinai, number two, seemingly the focus of Torah. The similar points is they both similarly explain why machlokas began at this time. And the other similar point is they, I'll get to the fourth point in a minute. Let's take questions first. Alex.
Could you say that another different point too, that according to Rambam's understanding, the old law came out of the written law, which was the foundation, and according to the Gaonim's understanding, the old law came side by side to the written, and could even be and the written could even be more bullet points of the old law?
I wouldn't go that far, but it's an intelligent point nonetheless. Meaning, how related are the Torah Shebichtav and Torah Shebaalpeh? And one may say Torah Shebaalpeh is just an interpretation of it. Some people say, no, it's independent value of it and thinking on its own. One may link these two up in a less direct way, but at the end of the day, the Rambam may believe, even though it's all given to us, it's mostly logic that determines these halachas. It's mostly the thought.
The logic, and
maybe one could say the Gaon would argue, even though all of Torah Shebaalpeh was given to them, after all, it's just interpretation of Tarshish Baksav, just it was given to them. Meaning, your point's not a bad one, it's just I wouldn't conclude it.
But the Rambam surely is saying that we've got the written and now we understand it using Perush and we learn everything out from it.
Some Perush, a lot of it logic. Meaning, you're right, the Rambam probably would believe that Tarshish Baksav is, relatively speaking, connected to Tarshish Baksav. The Gaonim may say it's equally, may even say it's more, but there'd be more room to disconnect the two. That's a fair point. And there'd be more room to disconnect the two. That's a fair point. But to be honest, you look around enough Gemaras, I would be shocked if you start learning Gemaras and this theory manifested itself in Machlok Se Rambam Gaonim 15 times in Shas. You with me? This would be an unbelievable doctoral thesis. You follow? In other words, you go through 50 machloksim in Shas, and you find every one of them, Rambam is more tied to the text, and the Gaonim is not tied to the text. You say, why is that? And you come back with this theory, that'd be an unbelievable doctoral thesis to write. I think it'd be very difficult, not just because it's a heck of a lot of work. I don't think you're gonna pull through. I mean, I don't think. Again, it's totally speculative, and you speculate. Yes, I speculate. No, but I don't think you'll find that. In the world,
according to the Rambam, it makes sense that it's learned out, and according to Gaonim, if it could be learned out, surely it would be. Why bother giving it to?
I understand your point. I'm saying that, therefore, if your point is 100% correct, you would conclude this doctoral thesis would be a great project and it probably would come out true, right? I'm saying I'm not sure that will come out true.
Okay. I'm saying according to what you told us, I'm not sure how it could, but fine.
Well, I think the Gaonim could go either way. In other words, there's enough room in the Gaonim that it could just be, although it's there's room for it to be further from it, you know, it may or may not be. And according to the Rambam, there's plenty of logic in it. You open up Baba Basra, there's like four Pesukim in the whole Masechta. You with me? You open up, I mean, Sukkah is a little different. We're learning Sukkah now. You know, I'm saying half these Masechtas, they're just totally disconnected. All in the whole world, half the world in Ezekiel. For sure, Baba Basra. It's like, you go through 100 daf in a row, you find four drushes, and none of them are about the dinim of Bava Basra. How much, you know, would you play into that? But it could be maybe the more psukim oriented things. I don't know, it'd be an interesting thing to think about. Yeah?
Why so much made about right now,
Mishnah
is not really
Shabbat? Who says Mishnah is not really Shabbat? Really about that? What's your question? Why is so much made?
No, dude.
What does it mean?
Whenever you start learning Mishnah, the Rebbeim wasn't a big deal about question of how is
ruining Mishnayos?
Learning
Mishnayos. It's
the
better thing to do.
The Rebbeim made a big deal about how Rebbeinu Nasi was able to write down the Mishnah, and sort of they're not able to write it down, but he was really just writing down what he was trying to recreate. Sort of about that.
I'm not fully in your question, but I don't think it's tied enough to the shir that I'm going to ask you to repeat it. Am I right? Well, I'll stick with my hunch. I'll answer it afterwards if you want. But you asked me about like how Torah Shabbat Pesh could have been written down in the first place. If how did that work? Why initially was it not? Now it is. It's a fair question. It requires thought, but not.
No, but I'm asking. You're saying that Mishnah isn't the original Torah Shabbat Pesh.
I'm saying Mishnah, whatever Rebbe had, whatever the texts he had, and whatever thoughts he had. I'm not sure exactly how much was previous documents and how much was his own stuff, but whatever he had, he put down, or whatever he thought was worthwhile putting down, he put down. Yeah.
Rambam was a Rishon, right?
The Rambam was a Rishon, yeah.
How could he
pull it on the other? For starters, this is not the first time you'll ever find Gaonim and Rishonim arguing. Even though Gaonim were a time period earlier, they argue on each other all the time.
But Gaonim don't argue.
Specifically, out of the world of Halacha, there's a lot more room also. Meaning you open up a Chumash and like you find that it says has an original Pshat, you're like, why is he saying original Pshat? There might be Kiva Darshan, the Pasuk some other way, and he was a Tana. But the Tziv says his own stuff anyway. For sure in Chumash, there's less of a need to repeat what the previous generation said and explain it. There's much more room for creativity in the world of Chumash than in Halacha. I think in the world of Machshava as well. But again, you'll find even in Halacha, you'll find Machlok Se Gaonim and Rishonim all the time. Yeah? One second. Even though we separate between the Gaonim and the Rishonim, I'm not sure the Rishonim did. They view the Gaonim as just earlier people from our generation, post Chasimus HaTalmud. And only later on did we start separating them. The Rishonim saw them as people who, there was before the Gemara, Chasimus HaTalmud, and after Chasimus HaTalmud. Yeah.
Is the Mishnah a shortened version of what was meant at the time, or all that was meant at the time?
I don't know. Tough to really know these things, but my guess would be not all that was known at the time. And the best proof is there are all sorts of brises that were known later on that were never made to the Mishnahs. Those Seftas and Bryce's, the Gemara quotes, and all sorts of Mechiltas and the Rashbis and all these type of things. It was not everything. It was a select amount Rebbe thought that was worthwhile writing down. How did he select? Was it based on stock? Was it based on Halacha L'Maaseh? Was it based upon what he knew? Was it based upon what he liked? Good question.
It wasn't like
they... Doctoral thesis I have written on this also. Exactly which Mishnayos Rebbe did include versus didn't include, how much was Pesach taken into account, and if Pesach was the only thing taken into account, is he ever quoted Machlokes? If he quotes Machlokes, when I quote all the Shitas, meaning would it make sense for me to quote either everything or only Halacha L'maaseh? Yet he did something in the middle. And if the question is, what did he do? I'm not touching that question tonight. It's a fantastic question to ask. Exactly what did Rebbe, what was his goal in writing down Mishnayos, and how did he achieve that goal? But that's like one of the most basic questions to learning Mishnayos. Okay, we're talking about Machlokes tonight. There's a third Shita, which is that of the Ritzvah. The Ritzvah Maseches Erevin. There Maseches Erevin is talking about the phrase Shivim Panim LaTorah, and the Ritzvah explains what he thinks it means. He writes Maseches Erevin on your Gimel and Beis, yeah. Well, oh, sorry, correct. The fourth point, which is the setup for the Ritzvah, is that until now, point number four, thanks a lot, Shaya, is that the Rambam and the Gaonim both believed there was a mano truth theory. That's probably a more sophisticated way of saying that. But essentially, the Rambam and the Gaonim believed there was one truth, and somehow it got distorted, either through forgetting or through inability to argue. No longer are we capable to argue, or we just no longer do we remember. The Ritzvah takes a totally different approach. He says that when the Gemara in Maseches Erevin says the Shivim Panim LaTorah, he believes that when Moshe was on Har Sinai, HaKadosh Baruch Hu told him all the Chakiras, all the Machlok Sei Rishonim, all the Machlok Sei Amoraim, everything. That Hashem says, here's the following situation. You can pass in L'chumra for the following six or seven reasons. You can pass in L'kula for the following six or seven reasons. Here's another reason to say Tahu, here's a reason to say Tame. And they're contradictory reasons. And some of them are supports and non-supports, and all the different logical perspectives that exist. And that's what it means, Shivim Panim LaTorah. There are 70 ways. 70, by the way, is Lav Dafka, right? 70 is the number that represents everything. That's why there's 70 Jews on the Beis Din. There's 70 nations of the world. There's 70 languages. So too, there are 70 different ways of looking at Torah, Shivim Panim LaTorah, which means Lav Dafka 70. It means all the ways should be taken into account. 70 is a number, Lav Dafka. It means inclusive of everything. That's what brings 70 cows on for Sukkot, connected to Shivim Olam. In any event, seemingly the Ritzvah believes now Moshe was on Har Sinai, he was given reasons to matter into us. Hashem explained to him that there'll be generations later on where the Rabbeim were going to disagree and take different sides in each debate. The Ritzvah seems to believe in a multiple truth system. The Ritzvah believes that it's not that Hashem created one truth and now we debate what it is, but rather multiple truths exist, two or three of them. I once heard from the chief rabbi, and he never quoted the following person, but I think I used to quote only the chief rabbi. I actually saw on YouTube a few nights ago, there was a debate between a conservative Jew and a Christian somebody other, Christian priest or whatnot. I really enjoy these things. I like what, there's a lot of good theological debate on YouTube. I enjoy it. Like once in a while, I come up like after sleepless and I can't fall asleep, so I sit in my bed and watch. And my wife's like, "What the heck are you doing? You know, who else is watching? You know, a theological debate between Jews and Christians at 3 a.m. and they can't fall asleep." So maybe there is someone. In any event, there was a conservative thinker who actually quoted a man named Martin Buber. Martin Buber was an interesting figure, interesting thinker. Nothing more than that, except for I think the chief rabbi may have been quoting him without officially quoting him. And, you know, in any event, Rabbi Jonathan Sacks said his followers, and it could be Martin Buber said the same thing as well. In any event, the point is, and it's a true point no matter who said it, I think so, that the opposite of a simple truth is a falsehood, the opposite of a profound truth is another profound truth. In a sense, that's what's going on in the Ritzvah. A very shallow, simple point. If I would say this is a shtender, it'd be true. If I say this is not a shtender, it'd be false. However, when it comes to sophisticated debate, when it comes to intellectual give and take, very often there's some truth to you and some truth to me and some truth to a third position. It's like, what's it called? Tevye. You know what I'm talking about? If fill around the roof, you know what I'm talking about? One guy says, the following argument is correct. He goes, you're right. And the other guy says, but the reverse argument is right. He goes, you're right. And the third guy walks over and goes, he's right and he's right. You both can't be right. And he goes, you know, you're right too. And the point is that, in other words, if it's a very simple issue, there's a very simple truth and falsehood. If it's a sophisticated issue, so already there, once there's an element of sophistication, So HaKadosh Baruch Hu is a very HaKadosh Baruch Hu is a sophisticated being. His Torah is a very sophisticated book. There are multifaceted levels and perspectives of Torah, and therefore the Ritva believes totally different from the Rambam, totally different from the Gaon, the whole first two Shitas, that multiple truths was ideally designed for Torah, being that it's a sophisticated book. Those are the three major approaches to how Machlok is developed. According to the Ritva, what works out very nicely is Machlokis is great. I understand what Elu V'Elu means. I understand what Shivim Parim LaTorah means. I don't fully understand the Gemara and Sanhedrin so well, nor do I understand why, historically speaking, it took so long for people to start quoting Machloksim, unless all the scars were given to Moshe and Moshe just passed down the Pesach and something else occurred, I don't know what. In any event, which is really correct, I have no clue. It couldn't be, it's a combination. Rashi in Maseches Ksubis, if I'm not mistaken, on Daf Nunvav Amud Aleph, seems to say, Elu ve'elu exists when this machlok is based on logic. When someone makes a mistake, we don't say Elu ve'elu. Which apparently, the upshot of Rashi, the conclusion of Rav Nashi, is that some machloksim are mistakes, and some of them are based on logic. Obviously, one has more credibility than the other. In any event, that more or less is the... are the three shitas. Quickly on the questions, and we'll talk about machloks and out of the world of Tanakh, out of the world of Gemara, i.e. Tanakh, Machshava, etc. Yeah.
You'd say a proof for the Ritva as to why machloks didn't start until they
I wouldn't say a proof, I would say a response.
Okay.
Defensive, yeah?
Yeah. Is that before then, not so long before the Beans, the gap between the Beans and Shana and Hillel was not that great.
Therefore?
That when they had Nevi'im, there were no machlokes because the word was directly from Hashem. And after a certain amount of time, when that direct word from Hashem stopped, that's when machlokes was.
There is a piece of Rav Tzadok HaKohen has along those lines. Yet, still, one would have expected to, if both Sfaras were given at Har Sinai, one should be able to trace them all the way back to Har Sinai, not just to the end of Nevi'im. In any event, what about a machlokes in Machshava? Let me get through this. What about machlokes in philosophy? Let's just say, the Rambam believes that God has no body. Anyone who wants to corpify God, give him a body, is a kofer. There are others who disagree. God has a body. Who's right? To be honest, I have no clue, but I follow the Rambam. I believe the Rambam's right. I have no proof to it, but that's what the world accepts, and that's what everyone in this room should accept, and one day we'll talk about God's body, maybe. But for the meantime, let's assume the Rambam. Whatever. Could anyone say Elu ve'Elu? It'd be difficult to imagine that both God has a body as well as doesn't have a body at the same time. Meaning, I'm not sure how the Ritva would deal with this type of thing. And even, in other words, even the Rambam, if eventually we get to that conclusion, do we really value both positions? Meaning, according to all three Tanoim, the three Rishonim, rather, at the end of the day, we value both Abayi and Rava's position. The Ritva, for sure, we do. And even the Rambam and the Gaon, we do. Now we value them. They became part of the framework of Torah. They've made their way into the world of Torah. We don't know which is really true. Only one of them is really true. Enoch and Ami. The more you don't understand the truth, the better perspective you get of the truth. And Torah grew. Torah, widened. Is that true in the world of Machshava? Could it be that God knows the future and doesn't know the future at the same time? Could it be that God has a body and doesn't have a body at the same time? Can it be that God can break logic and can't break logic at the same time like we spoke about? Very difficult to argue the answer is yes. And therefore, Ruba, the Jewish thinkers, believe the answer is no. However, Rabbi Taragin once showed me something that Rav Kook wrote, where Rav Kook believes that Enoch and Ami, no problem. God can and cannot have hands at the same time. No problem. What's the problem? So the seeming problem is that what? It contradicts logic. So I guess Rav Kook would have to conclude that what? God is not limited by logic, and even though it's in our mind it looks like God can not, lift a rock that's so heavy that he can't lift it as well as create that rock also. So can God create a rock that's so heavy he can't lift it? The answer is yes, but he can also lift it. It's a contradiction. So too, can God have hands and not have hands? Yes, it's a contradiction, something along those lines. What about in the world of Tanakh? Could it be, let's just say it's a historical machlokes, Vayaka Melech Chadash al-Mitzrayim, Shalom Yadaz Yosef. Rav and Shmuel argue as to whether or not it was a new king or not a new king? Can one argue that, historically speaking, the king was A, new king and not just the same old king, as well as B, not a new king? Did I say something twice? Sorry. Machlokes Rav and Shmuel. Can one argue it is a new king and not just the same old king, as well as it's not a new king, it is just the same old king? It'd be very difficult to argue an historical perspective that two contradictory facts can exist, even more difficult than philosophical ones. How can it be that this is a shtender as well as not a shtender? How can it be that it's the same person as well and not a different person, as well as a different person and not the same person? Very difficult to argue that. And therefore, I haven't found anyone who says that both historical truths exist. But the standard response is, we don't care historically what occurred. We care about the messages of the Torah, the ideology of the Torah, the philosophy of the Torah, the hashkaf of the Torah. Meaning, who cares who lived? Either Rav's right or Shmuel's right. Either it was a new king or an old king. You want to know what? Whatever the message that the Torah is telling me is true, whether or not Rav is right or Shmuel is right, or maybe the two different messages in the Machlokes is, what is the message about? But essentially, the historical facts are not, when they say Torah is not a history book, part of what they mean is, we're less concerned with the historical presentation of Torah, and much more concerned with its ideology, with its hashkafa. Torah is a terrible history book. We tell the story of the Jews in the desert. We left out, of the 40 years, 38 of them. However, the Torah is a book of ideology, a book of values, a book of messages, a book of morals, ethics, monotheism, philosophy, hashkafa, political science, who knows what, all sorts of values, how we're supposed to view and perceive the world. So then the Torah did a great job, and it could be, there's room for machlokas in the world of halacha and gemara, there's room for machlokas in the world of machshava, and there's room for machlokas in the world of Tanakh, and it could be, maybe, not just in the world of gemara, are there multiple truths? Does this type of theory work? But maybe even the world of Machshav, according to Rav Kook, maybe. Many would disagree. Most would probably disagree. And the world of Tanakh, probably as well. Before I take a round of questions, I wanted to do the last, part of this year, which is Machlokas a positive thing or not? Is it good? Is it not good? Why did Hashem allow for it? Why is there Machlokas? Not just how did there become Machlokas. We want, until now we spoke about historically, how did it occur to be that there's Machlokas. Now I want to speak, I'm going to say ontologically, but ideologically. In terms of values, is there a value of Machlokas? Is it a good thing or not? You want to know what? I'll take around the questions. I'll get back to that my own question in a minute. Let's take a quick round of questions. We'll get back to, not historically speaking, how did Machlokas develop, but philosophically speaking, why did Hashem allow for Machlokas to develop? Yeah. No, Rashi quotes both days. That would be one of the two shittas. The other shita would be, it's a new king. Either it's the same old king with new ideas, or it's a new king. It definitely can't be both. On a historical level, on a hashkafic level, it could. That sounds like a third pshat, which is neither Rav or Shmuel. In other words, Rav and Shmuel thought they were arguing. Once you say they're not, that's a third interpretation. You with me? Alex. Of course. I think Hashkaf would be easier than Machshava. Meaning, does Hashem value sitting and learning Kolel, or does Hashem want you to go get a job and not to take stock from the community? I could see God, saying, I hear both arguments, and let the people duke it out, let the people debate it, let the people figure out who's right for what. That wouldn't surprise me as much as God having hands as well as not having hands. Hashkaf, I think, would be an easier way of arguing Eilu v'Eilu. Carton and Alex, yeah. The Gemara does. The Gemara tries to do everything. First it tries to disprove one shita always. That's what like Kashmas are doing. In other words, the Gemara quotes Machlokes by Rav, and the Gemara brings 15 rais that Rav is right. Now, being that Abai wasn't an idiot, we have to try best to defend Abai if we can. So now we don't know who's right. If we reject the Abaye, the Gemara says, like, Tiyuv to the Abaye. Sometimes it does that as well. The Gemara tries its best to reject it, and once it's done trying to reject it, they want to make sure, is that really a good rejection? Let's not close our eyes to Abaye's possible answer just because we have a good argument. Why even bother analyzing it, Shemina? Well, for two reasons why. Number one is that very often Abaye's answers to attacks on Bryce's very often help give us new perspectives to what Abaye really meant. Or even help Abaye shape his shita. You thought Abaye was talking about always after this Bryce, he found that he's only talking about 70% of the time because the Bryce, otherwise it would be a kasha against the Bryce. And even sometimes when you defend Abaye, the Gemara recorded give and take of the base medrash, and it's important to realize that attacks and arguments and proofs are part of Torah. This is the Torah that we have. I don't know if the Gemara knows or does know. I don't know. Sometimes the Gemara may be telling you Abaye's logic. Sometimes we're just doing its best job figuring out what it would have been it's supplementing as best as they can. When you and I read a Rashi on Chumash or Gemara, it'd be much easier if Rashi was living right here. It'd be like, Rashi, what do you mean? Unfortunately, he's not. That's just the way the world works. People die and we have to try our best to figure out their ideas. Or give up. But we're not giving up.
Gemara speculates on the body. It's not really a body sheet anymore. Now it's repeating on the Rashi sheet about what they...
Every Rashi you learned is your perspective of Rashi also. Say, I agree. I'm not sure everyone, it could be the reader of Rashi quoting Abaye word for word. Sometimes they may be, sometimes they may be doing, sometimes your perspective is through Ravina of Rashi's eyes. That could be. And if I'm giving shir, it's through my eyes as well. Yeah, that's, I'm not sure any way of circumventing that problem. Yeah, hey.
In other words, I'd like to apologize for and attack my comment about the chief rabbi. But also, I'd like to ask, why is there any more problematic?
We're getting taped here. It's important that you said that.
Why is there any more problematic about the? Why is there any more problematic with the tanakh than it is for some to say that one the same sukkah is both kasha and pasuk?
Because that's halach is more abstract. I can imagine Hashem telling Moshe the following ideas can be true. On one hand, there's a principle called mitzvah b'avera. And would it apply days 2 through 7 or not? It's machlokas Rav Yochanan and Shmuel. Is the following sukkah, well, it could be Hashem would say, depending on the halachic principles, or I'll say it the way I would say it as a lamdin, depending on the lamdus, would depend upon the following conclusion. And both tzadim and chakir are correct, and let the Amoraim go out and debate it. Masha'en came, both historical realities, it's very difficult to say they both exist. Meaning one historical fact, one's an objective idea. Abstract idea.
An objective idea as well, isn't it?
Not according to the Ritva. According to the Rambam and the Gaonim, yes. That's exactly the point. That's exactly
the Ritva. Whenever we say that both right, is that only according to the Ritva? Or according to the Rambam?
I don't know if they are both right in the right sense, but the bottom line is Torah expanded, Torah allowed for it, etc., etc. And now comes the question which I was asking, why would Torah allow for it? So according to the Ritva, why does Torah allow for machlokas? Because the answer is, it's exactly what we wanted. It shows the sophistication, it shows the different levels, it shows the intricacies of Torah, there are all the different perspectives and all different levels, it shows it's a sophisticated, profound work, of course it's going to happen. According to the Gaonim, the exact opposite is true. We didn't want machlokas, but what can we do? Humans are human beings. Hashem wanted people to memorize Torah generation after generation after generation. There was no better way of doing it. And therefore, Hashem had no choice but to allow for machlokas to develop. In other words, according to Ritva, the ideal, according to the Gaonim, something Hashem tried his best to prevent. And you know, unless he would have made all sorts of crazy changes to the physics, the metaphysics of the world, which he wasn't willing to do, why not? Debatable, but not right now. Worthwhile thinking about, but not right now. And the real question becomes, according to the Rambam, why would Hashem design a system which is so accident-prone, which is so open to machlokes, when He could have done something much different, which is give us more direction, you know, etc., etc.? And I'd like to draw upon a Gemara in Bava Metzia and Daf Nun Tes. The Gemara in Bava Metzia and Daf Nun Tes says that there's an unbelievable machlokes between Rabbi Eliezer versus the Chacham about Tanur Achsanai. There's a certain tanur, a certain oven. As to whether or not it's Tahor or Tameh, the Gemara Chalok is debated. I forgot what Shita says, which, to be honest with you. And Rabbi Eliezer says, I'm convinced that I'm right. And I am so convinced that I'm right. That if I'm right, right now the river should stop flowing down, and against the laws of gravity, the river should start flowing upwards. And lo and behold, magically on the spot, breaking the laws of nature, breaking the laws of physics, breaking the laws of gravity, the river start flowing upwards. And the Chachamim respond, we don't paskin like flowing rivers. Well, Rabbi Lez is like, well, you think I got only one trick in my bag of tricks? Rabbi Lez says, if that's correct, I'll have the carob tree, the chorev, the carob tree prove that I'm correct. And lo and behold, the carob tree jumps. The Chacham say, you can't bring a raya from a carob tree. We don't pass like carob trees. Rabbi Lez is like, well, that's correct. The walls of the base measures will prove to you that I'm right. And the base measures start shaking and shaking. They have to start davening to make sure that they stop shaking. Eventually, they stop shaking. And the Chacham says, see, I told you so. And the Chacham like, we don't pass like walls of Bate Medrash. And you may be asking the question, why did Rabbi Lezer think the carob tree would be more of a proof than the river and the base medrash more than the carob tree? And that's a question that has to be asked, but not for right now. I don't know why. Meaning, first of all, why dafka these three things? What was Rabbi Lezer thinking that? Oh, they don't pass them like rivers, but of course they pass them like carob trees. Oh, of course they don't pass them like rivers and carob trees, but of course they pass them like walls of Bate Medrash. I don't know exactly the answers to those questions. Maybe we can think about it later. And then Rabbi Lezer comes out with the biggest proof of them all. If I'm right, that it should be a basko, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, v'chvodo v'atzmo, should call out from Shemayim, crystally clear, and tell everyone the halach is like me, and lo and behold, Hashem screams out from Shemayim, there's a basko on the spot, telling everyone that Rabbi Lezer is correct. And the Chachamim respond, Torah lo ba Shemayim hi, we paskin acharei rabim lahatos, we paskin like the majority. And even though Hashem is on the minority side, that's not good enough to outweigh the majority. One may have thought Hashem has extra special weight. God, we don't care about your thoughts in Torah. And if that's not perplexing enough, that's not difficult enough to understand why it is that the Chacham don't seem to care about God's position or his opinion on the book that he himself authored, the conclusion of the Gemara is that much more troubling. Because the Gemara then says, Rabbi Nassan bumped into Eliyahu HaNavi, which in its own right requires interpretation of what that means. I was never Zocha. And he asked Eliyahu HaNavi, what was Hashem's reaction when the Chacham totally ignored his point of view? And Eliyahu HaNavi responds, Hashem was laughing and smiling and saying, Nitzachtem Banai, Nitzachtem Banai, my children, you have defeated me, my children, you have defeated me. And therefore the question is not just, why did the Chacham not care about God's position? And more so, why was God proud when the Chacham totally perverted his Torah? And to ask the question, independent of this Gemara in a more philosophical way, why would a perfect God write a perfect book and give it to an imperfect man to interpret? What was he expecting? Oh, wow, great chidushim, imperfect man. That's better than I would have thought of. Did God not expect machlokas? Did not expect debate? Did God not expect an inferior interpretation? If God wanted an interpretation, who should have wrote the commentary? God himself. And therefore, I think the answer to all these questions, the Rambam, the Gemara in Bava Metzia, as well as the philosophical one about why the perfect God had a perfect book and gives an imperfect man to interpret, is as follows. HaKadosh Baruch Hu, although he values emes of Torah tremendously, and the Rambam will be the first one to say that, yet apparently HaKadosh Baruch Hu values our analysis of it, our questioning and our answering, our give and take, our working hard, our comprehension, even more so. Meaning, if Hashem really wanted us to inculcate the love and commitment to Torah deep into our kishkes, deep into our bones, to really have it penetrate deep into us, Hashem had to make us responsible for it. That at the end of the day, if you have a kasha unanswered, you have to come up with an answer. Don't just leave it. You have a responsibility to ask, you have a responsibility to answer, you have a responsibility to uncover. And Hashem's even willing to allow for a sacrifice on objective truth in order to achieve this goal. Hashem is willing for Torah to develop in a way that may not be perfect perfectly in line with what He had initially intended in terms of truth. However, man has the ability to become a partner with Hashem, and that outweighs the truth goal. Man has the ability together to interpret Torah with Hashem. And that's exactly what the Rambam believes. Hashem, certain Torah Hashem didn't want us touching. Halacha must be seen, perish must be seen. However, there were certain parts of Torah which He wanted us to interpret with Him. He gave us the Yud Gimel Midas HaTorah Shin Adreshes Behem, Rabbi Shmuel's 13 principles. He gave us Kal V'Chomer, He gave us Gezer Shav, He gave us the ability to think. And even if sometimes we'll come to conclusions that are incorrect, as long as we're working with the system, Achrei Rav Mahatos, Torah Lo Ba'ashamayini, as long as we're working with the system, Kal V'Chomer, things Gezer Shavas, and logic, and not arguing, if I come along and disagree with Tanayim, that's not what we're talking about. I'm an Achron, I can't disagree with Tanayim. However, if I'm working within the structures, in the framework of the system, there is room for creativity, and there's even room that creative mistakes become the objective point of Torah. And if I'm not mistaken, you find this type of statements throughout the Chachmei HaMasorah. I think Rav Moshe said once, or it's printed in the beginning of the Igros Moshe, maybe something along the lines of Moshe. Rav Moshe said, I can't guarantee I'm paskening a liba de emes, but I can guarantee I'm paskening a liba de halacha. I don't know if this is exactly how Hashem designed Torah, but I have full faith in the system and where it's brought me that what we're doing is correct. And that could be really what's going on underlying the Rambam. There is a firmer approach to the Rambam, which is Hashem uses hashgacha pratis. Hashem, in other words, how do we paskin? Not Torah shalom b'shamayim. Hashem Himself is kind of like a puppeteer, more involved, trying His best to figure out that we should follow halacha l'maaseh, the right. Hashem loves Torah, values it, and He's willing to intervene in a very subtle and non-overwhelming way in order to make sure that Torah retains its purity and its truthfulness. And that's another mahalach that people say in defense of the Rambam, or maybe to answer the philosophical question of how a perfect man to interpret. In any event, what we saw was three major shittas how machlok is developed. We spoke about it in the world of halach and gemara. We discussed it briefly in the world of machshava, Rav Kook versus the majority of people. We spoke about it in the world of Tanakh, where it's not so almost important what historically would occur, but rather the hashkaf of Torah. Then we spoke about why Hashem would have allowed for machlok, according to Ritva, Hashem didn't just allow for it, He designed it. According to the Gaon, He had no choice. And according to the Rambam, two major mahalchim. Number one, Hashem allows machlokas, but kind of watches it from afar. That's actually the second one I said. And the first one is Hashem allows for us to become His partners and develop Torah along with Him, even at the expense of not retaining its initial perfection. Have a great week.